V-minus 63. Ford Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Just as the final few minutes of Focus 2020 had flashed by Dan's stunned mind, so did the final few hours of Sunday. He was surrounded by friends and family, with the rest of the Birchwood crew having come through from next door to watch developments on Emma's huge projector screen. The Vanuatu Triangle was considerably smaller than the one that had been found in Zanzibar and would evidently fit within a third still undiscovered mid-sized triangle. The few blurry images that had reached the airwaves from unofficial sources presented a clear enough view of the Zanzibar Triangle for its inlet grooves to be apparent, and almost everyone who believed it could be real had immediately assumed that two further objects, identically shaped but smaller in size, would fit within it. Any lingering doubts on that front had been shattered by the discovery in Vanuatu, and what was clear now was that the world was one more discovery away from a complete set, whatever that might ultimately mean. All Dan could tell anyone was that he didn't know whether the second triangle was real or not, but that his doubts had grown tenfold due to the ridiculously convenient location and John Cole's equally convenient departure from the live TV panel just before it was discovered. Vivid, live pictures of this second triangle came in while local law enforcement tried to secure the site as quickly as possible, and Dan could once again see the same kind of familiar and conspicuous markings he had noticed on the first. These were the same markings he'd seen in his only recent vision, but he was no longer as sure of their meaning as he had been mere hours earlier. Back then, Dan had dismissed Timo Fiori's suggestion that the messengers may have been warning of an imminent GeoSov hoax designed to further destabilize the world. It struck Dan as senseless for the messengers themselves to drop a second triangle within ELF territory, and this placement ran in contrast to a vague idea he had so far kept in his own head, that the messengers may have been planning to place three pieces of a complete message-holding artifact in various locations as a means of forcing global cooperation between rival nations and organizations. But for this to have worked, he reasoned, the second triangle would have had to turn up in a GCC country or one of the world's few unaffiliated nations. Giving two pieces of a three-piece puzzle to the ELF's irresponsible leaders wasn't something the messengers would do, he firmly believed, so the hoax theory was starting to make sense. Further support for this angle came from Poppy Bradshaw's incredible revelation that she and her fellow GeoSovs somehow knew about the chip in Dan's neck, which told him that they were a more serious force to be reckoned with than previously thought. How they could know such a thing was a mystery, and Dan tried to grasp at the silver lining that the earth-shattering news, which came minutes later, had at least consigned Poppy's mention of the chip to the sidelines. Billy Kendrick and Joe Crabb both accepted an invitation from ACN to give their reactions in a 15-minute dual interview from New York, one in which Dan had also been invited to participate. The invitation went to Emma, as such things always did, but she shot it down without even troubling Dan. Had he known anything about this filtering action, he would have greatly appreciated it. Tara was as quiet as Dan through a confusing and reactive few hours while everyone else tried to make sense of what was going on, and after a while, she announced that she was going to bed soon. No one else heard her at first, since her announcement came shortly after ACN began showing footage of growing disorder in areas of the world where it was daytime. Things weren't quite at the level of overnight looting and rioting, at least not in North America, but demonstrations which had been underway when news of the Vanuatu Triangle broke understandably swelled and grew more insistent, now that the ELF's leadership was apparently in possession of two extraterrestrial objects and showed no sign of granting open scientific access. Dan couldn't help but fear that his words on Focus 2020, intended to force Ding Xiang and his colleagues' hands, would instead make things worse. Had he known what was coming, Dan would have chosen his words more carefully. He knew hindsight was 2020, though, so tried not to beat himself up too much. And really, in the presence of so much confusion, he had little remaining mental energy to do much besides wonder what the hell was happening. "I'm going to lie down too," he said. This caught everyone's attention, primarily because it was the first thing he'd said in a while, and no one had quite caught it over the general noise of frantic discussions, both the discussion blaring through the projector's soundbar and that occurring between the rest of the room's shell-shocked inhabitants. I want to get this damn chip out of my neck as soon as I can, and I want to talk to Slater or Godfrey about speaking to Ding, Dan said, justifying his need to at least try to get something resembling a decent night's sleep. Because if this is a Geosav hoax, there's a chance he's falling for it too. Walker fooled everyone, and at the time it looked like things were working out so conveniently for Godfrey that he had to be in on it, but he wasn't. For all we know, a hoaxed triangle could have turned up in Vanuatu 8 hours ago, and the ELF decided to keep it quiet until after Cole could mention Vanuatu on TV. And I don't know why, before you ask. I'm trying to get my head back into the mindset of all the bullshit meta-conspiracy crap I thought we'd left behind last year. I hate this. I hate this. But we can't make any assumptions about anything. Dan, of course, had no idea that President Slater had mentioned a similar theoretical possibility of the ELF falling for a hoax to Chairman Godfrey, nor that Godfrey had perfunctorily dismissed it out of hand. He watched only Emma's reaction, keen to gauge her immediate thoughts, and he wasn't sure whether to be disappointed or pleased that she seemed to see a lot of merit in the idea. "Now, that's interesting," she said. "Because the whole time since Zanzibar, I've been wondering what the ELF's winning angle is if this is their hoax. And if we're starting to think this really isn't the messengers, a Geosav hoax is the other possibility that might make more sense."
"I said it this morning," Timo interjected, no gloating tone in the words. "And now I firmly believe it. We didn't know anything about Poppy Bradshaw before tonight, but I'll have a team look deeply into her current and former associations. They knew about Dan's chip, which was essentially a U.S. government secret, and they were hours away from an attempt to take President Slater hostage. However stupid they sound when they open their mouths, these aren't amateurs we're dealing with."
"I'll look into that too," Clark said. "I tracked down one of the assholes who worked behind the scenes on their chicken shit attack on you guys last year, and I still have access to the database of old antidotalist and welcomer connections. Holding companies they used for payments, low-level chumps they used for ordering the materials, all kinds of stuff like that." Emma nodded.
"But Timo, make sure you trust the people you put on that, okay? The last thing we want is the Geosavs getting wind that we're onto them, if this is their work."
"Of course," he said, gesturing to his heavily scarred arm and neck. "After what the two of us went through last year, I will never take these scoundrels lightly, and I'll take every precaution. I'm also going to call it a night, but Emma, Clark, if you want to get together tomorrow to talk about this investigation into Poppy and her colleagues, I'll be at Fiori Frontieri all day."
Phil Norris, Henry McCarthy, and Mr. Bird, all of whom had been animatedly involved in the post-Vanuatu speculation, made similar moves. Phil and Mr. Bird shook Dan and Clark's hands before leaving, as the pair of them always had and quite likely always would.
"What about you guys?"
Tara asked Emma and Clark, who were both still anchored to the couch as reactions to the Vanuatu Triangle poured in from around the world.
"Later," Clark said. Emma nodded, barely breaking her focus on the screen.
Tara then followed Dan into the kitchen, where he was pouring himself a glass of water.
"Want one?"
he asked. She shook her head.
"Do you think you'll manage to get to sleep okay?"
Dan instinctively chuckled, smiling warmly.
"What do you think, Tara?"
"Want one?"
she asked, holding out not a glass of water, but a small container of pills.
"They're just sleeping pills, but they're the best sleeping pills."
"Where did you get them?"
"Doctor,"
Tara whispered, turning the cylindrical container around so Dan could see that her name really was written on the affixed label.
"I'm hardly going to fill you with backstreet drugs."
Dan opened his palm, satisfied the pills were safe.
"Why did the doctor give you these, though? Do you have insomnia?"
"Nah, just like..."
She shrugged, looking for an easy answer.
"General long-term depression, but I'm trying to help you out here, so I wasn't looking for a chat with Dr. Dan, okay? Put that down your throat and put your head on the pillow, and all these bullshit worries will float away until the sun comes up, and we get to start the party all over again."
"Are you sure you're okay?"
Dan asked. He couldn't help it. Tara really didn't sound like herself. It seemed like she knew better than to mix her own dose with alcohol, at least, but he still felt unsettled.
"You're going through a lot more shit than I am right now," she replied. "So let's just agree we're both okay. Okay?"
"Okay."
Good night, then, he said, swallowing the pill as he walked away. Tara followed him out of the kitchen and turned in the opposite direction. Night, Dan.
Ah!
Dan screamed, grasping his neck as tears immediately welled in his eyes in reaction to what had to be the sharpest pain he had ever felt. It was more concentrated than ever and somehow deeper, and it came with no vision or mental image. They're close, he thought, wincing and wishing it would stop. They're so close. When Dan's eyes opened, as the worst of the pain abruptly died to leave a dull but still intense sensation, he saw that he hadn't been mentally transported to a symbolic location, either. Instead, he was where he was, at home, on his knees, beside his bed. He pulled himself up and saw Emma lying there like nothing was going on. How hadn't she heard? He called her name and reached towards her, but his hand recoiled before it made contact. Because before it made contact with Emma, it hit something else. A force field, he realized. They're not close. They're here. Even this realization couldn't prepare Dan for the brilliant white light he saw when he turned towards the bedroom's door. It was a total light, captivating in its brilliance, and it dared him to approach. No, he spoke out loud. If you want me, here I am. At that point, a bluish silver hand emerged through the light like a child's puppet through a curtain. Dan gazed on in wonder. The hand's familiarity brought a sudden and surprising serenity to his mind, with the messenger's two double-wide fingers and extremely dexterous thumb bringing back all kinds of visceral memories. The hand then turned, palm up, and the two wide fingers unmistakably called Dan to come hither. Entranced and without so much as a backwards glance towards the still sleeping Emma, Dan McCarthy reached out, took the hand, and followed it into the light.